topological versus matricial dimension. And T-star algebras. And I guess the goal of the talk was to hopefully justify the title.
I guess the subtitle is 45 minutes till Miller time. okay.
Enough crowd. Dimension in T-star algebra. So this is where I'm going to start. I want to remind you of some notions of dimension. Probably familiar to many, but anyways. So we have the oldest one that we use regularly is the stable rank, introduced by Mark Riesel as an adaptation of the Bass stable rank for rings. I guess that was around 1983, something like that. We also have the real rank, which is Brown and Peterson, about 1990, thereabouts. More recently, there's the traceable rank, introduced by Hsin Lin, and that was somewhere around 2000, maybe a little earlier. Is that right? And most recently, the decomposition rank. Due to Kirchberg and Winter around 2003. Okay, so why are these notions of dimensions of C-star algebras? Well, I guess the original justification is that the following, well, X is a compact metric space. So let me fix some abbreviations. S-R-R-R-E-R-E-R. Right? So the stable rank of C of X is roughly dimension of X over 2. Now there's some fucking around with floor and ceiling functions here and so on. But anyways, that's about what it is. The real rank, and in fact all the other ranks, and get this dimension right on the nose, x, and the decomposition rank, c of x. Okay. So they generalize the covering dimension of a compact metric space. Well, then what happens in the
isn't there a factor of 1 that's
going to be stable rank? That's why it's wiggly. So I don't have to remember things correctly. So the point will be eventually I'm sort of interested in non-commuter algebra. So let's take another example. How about the MNC of X? What happens here? Okay, for the stable rank, and in fact, for the real rank, another wiggly equal sign here. Here you have roughly a factor of n in the denominator, so it's sensitive to tensor matrices. The stable rank gets reduced. One caveat is that you can't get from non-minimum stable rank to minimum stable rank in this way, but otherwise, roughly, that's what happens. And similarly, for the real rank, it's just over n. But for the other two, then the traceable rank, I guess nothing changes really. And the same goes for the decomposition rank. So, the point I want to make with all this is that these two notions of rank, the traceable rank and the decomposition rank, they are really topological in flavor. Right? They're insensitive to tensor rank matrices. That's what they're picking up. They're topological. And these two are, at least in some sense, mixed. Sensitive to some sort of non-commutative behavior.
Yeah. Okay, so where to go from there? Some slightly more generalist. These are algebras. Move on to what are called AH algebras. I would remind you then that so an algebra A is semi-homogeneous if it has the following form. It's a finite direct sum of homogeneous algebras, so this will be compressions of continuous functions on xi tensor with a compact by some projections of Pi. Okay? A is AH if it is an inductive limit of semi-homogeneous C-star algebra. This is kind of the next step of complexity up. So a little remark here is that if A is semi-homogeneous, then F of A is equal to the max over I of F of AI. So I'll call this piece AI, where F is any of these stable rank, real rank, spatial rank, decomposition rank. So which values can you get for these various ranks in the case of AH algebras? For simple universal AH, where is the stable rank? Well, Hiller can show that in fact it can take any value up to including infinity. And he showed the same thing, the real rank. And then, a little interestingly, where do these fit? So far, the only examples we have for these are where the tracial rank is, or decomposition rank is either quite small, and so in 1, 2, maybe 3, I don't even know if that is, or it's infinite. And so the simple case, that seems to be all that happens, in fact. I believe that it's more or less all that
happens. 0, 1.
Zero. Okay. Wilhelm? Not known.
Right. So there we go. That's a project for everyone.
So Andrew here says F of A is that F of the inductive limit is the maximum of the
A? No. Here what I'm referring to is semi-homogeneous. Say A is semi-homogeneous, these are the AIs then. Yeah, so the only reason I write this, it's certainly known that if you have an AH algebra of slow dimension growth, it can be written as a limit of things where the dimension of the spectrum is at most 3. So certainly.
It's only the way you take a subhomogeneous one, then you can read out this way.
That's okay. So, all right. Definitely it's in here, am I not?
Up to a factor of 1.
Okay. The point really is that it doesn't seem to be anything other than some quite small values or infinite. Right? The other ones don't seem to occur at all. Right? And what I'm really interested in, I guess, for today is whether, in the same way that stable rank sort of measures the ratio between the matricial side of the C-star algebra and the topological dimension of the spectrum, whether you can find an invariant which does that for much more general AH algebras, and in fact, can you find an abstract version of that idea that works for any sort of unital, stably finite C-star algebra? So these are the values that are taken on here. You might think, all right, so this is kind of out of the question. It just gives you the topological dimension. Not that they're, of course, very interesting concepts, but
not for what I want to talk about. The stable rank, however, seems to survive to this point. It looks like it might be useful for sort of putting your finger on the ratio between matricial and topological dimension. But unfortunately, it doesn't quite work like that. So, this is a fact, and in fact, it's a theorem. We'll talk a little bit more about how you establish it later on. But here's what can happen. So, there exists a simple unit of AH algebra. A, with stable rank equal to 1, such that A cannot be written as a limit of semi-homogeneous AJs with stable rank of AJ less than, I don't know, 42 or any other big number for that matter, or infinitely many J's. Right, so if you take this AH algebra, no matter which decomposition you take, and those are highly non-unique, there is absolutely no way to write it so that the stable rank of the building blocks is too small, basically. But it crashes in the limit. It becomes stable rank 1. So despite the fact that it really, I mean, there's no way to write it without this data. And these are semi-homogeneous algebra. So here it says that this ratio between topological dimension and matricial size is never less than 42, yet in the limit you're getting no interesting information from stable rank. So it sort of says that if you want a version of this ratio up here from general AH algebra, it can't be a stable rank. So then what you do is the most naive possible thing. If you want to measure this ratio, you just measure the ratio. So, I make a definition. Get this all.
Just right.
Is this special order of the 42?
Well, no, you can put any number you want there. Well, actually, there is something pretty special.
Okay, somebody. So, let A be an AH algebra. What we define the dimension rank ratio of A, and I'll write B on R, A, to be the infimum of a set of C non-negative reals such that, it has to be, there exists some inductive limit decomposition for A, an inductive limit decomposition in terms of semi-homogeneous algebras, so let me fix some notation for them, AI, the sum from L equals 1 to AI, AI, L. So there exists some decomposition like this, such that the lim su I of the max, sorry, over L of this ratio, you take to this the dimension of this space, and you divide by the rank of the corresponding projection. To be equal to C. Okay, so what is this saying? In other words, you look at all the possible inductive limit decompositions for A as an AH algebra, and you ask asymptotically, what do the race, what does the ratio of the size of the spectra dimension-wise to the rank of the projection look like? And then you take the infimum of all these real numbers. If it exists, and it's infinite otherwise. And so, of course, the question is whether this gives you anything
meaningful. I guess
you'll
get the same thing if you put min in down in that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, and in fact, if you take any sequence, you can always compress it to get a real limit. So,
yeah.
I'm just going to take it.
I was just interested in limiting the definition part
of it. Yeah. Right, yeah, the idea is that if you take any decomposition, you should just right away compress it so that you get a limit. So, okay. Let me mention a few properties of this. A neutral AH on wheel has a few somewhat decent properties. To measure this invariant close, and this is less equal to the invariant. I mean, most of this stuff follows from. Let me mention these, and then I'll say what the value of this invariant is for a semi-homogeneous C-star output. That's what we would hope it to be. So for direct sums, it's just the max of these two things. B. And then for a tensor product of the matrix algebra, this certainly reduces things. That's equal to 1 over k. I mean, I really think this ought to be equality here, but it's not quite clear how to do that. Anyway, it's also not so important, I think, since this invariant is only meant to eventually motivate a more interesting invariant. Okay, another proposition is the following. This really justifies the name, I think. If take the dimension ratio of just some semi-homogeneous C-star algebra, then this really is the max over I of these ratios. But this is not entirely trivial, of course, because the definition says I have to take the C-star algebra and I have to look at all the possible inductive limit decompositions for it when I take the infimum flow. But it turns out to be exactly what you hope it is. All right. Has a few.
When you say it's supposed to be equal in part three, that's in the simple case?
Sorry?
In part three of the proposition?
Yeah. I mean, the invariant is maybe not the widest invariant for non simple C-star algebras, I would say. So let me mention even some important theorems here. The first theorem pertains to the minimum value here. So it says that this, the minimum value of this invariant gives you nice behavior. So let A be a unital simple C-star algebra, H algebra, of real rank 0. Okay, and following our equivalence, first is that this decomposition, or this dimension rank ratio, A, is 0. Second is that A is actually Z stable. A AF. And the fourth thing would be important later is that the Quint semigroup of A is what's called almost unperforated. I'll come back to that. And the stable rank A. The idea here is that the minimum value of this invariant gives you classifiable C-star algebras, nice C-star algebras. Okay? And it's definitely true that if it's not zero, they're nasty. So the point of this invariant is that it's supposed to return some information about these are algebras which are pathological with respect to trying to classify things by case theory. They require finer invariants. It is, yeah. Yeah, that's another equivalence here. Now, of course, this depends on classification, you see right here. I mean, basically, there's not a lot of work here. This just gives you cancellation and unperforation of K0. And then combining that with real rank 0 gives you stable rank 1, and then it's proven that simple integral AH with real rank 0, stable rank 1, unperforated K3, then it's essentially a... so slow dimension growth is another. But in general, that's an open question, which I mean, whether this is the same as slow dimension growth, but it should be. Yeah.
I think
it's
the same.
No, because this just says that there, if it's zero, it just means that there are ones where the asymptotic limit is arbitrarily small, but doesn't go to zero in the limit. Yeah, so, not quite clear. And the other theorem, which means that it's an interesting invariant, is that, for all non-negative C, there exists a unital simple AH algebra A sub C such that the dimension rank ratio of A sub C is exactly C. So every possible value in the range is obtained. The algebras you get here, moreover, are actually quite hard to distinguish using the usual invariants. So, okay, a few things here. The stable rank of these is always 1. The real rank is always 1. The decomposition rank is always infinite. And I don't know about the tracial rank, but I'm sure it's infinite. So, and the point is that these other ranks really don't differentiate these algebras, but here you get the full spectrum of behavior. Okay, so how do you prove a theorem like this? Where do you get? I mean, it's fairly easy to get upper bounds on this invariant if you have an inductive limit decomposition in hand. It's getting the lower bounds that's tricky. So in order to prove this theorem the first time around, the way to get the lower bound is to use ordered K-theory. Okay, so the idea, very roughly, since we get to the other invariant, is the following. If you want to you need some examples of C-star algebras where a lower bound on this ratio is witnessed by elements in K0. So you take an even sphere, say, and then if you look at K0 of this C-star algebra, what you get is the lattice squared, and where are the positive elements? Well, I'll say this is n just for now. So all this stuff is positive in K0, and also the axis back to here. Nothing else is positive, okay? So you take this guy here, call that x, and then if you apply, there's a unique state on the K0 group, any trace, really any probability measure on the sphere here yields the same state on K0. The space is connected. So there's a unique state on the K0 group, and what is the state of this? Well, it just returns basically the x-axis value, okay? Minus 1. So the way to think of this is the biggest size of a hole in the positive cone. So this thing is not positive, but the multiple of it definitely is positive. It's an example of perforation. And if you measure the size of the biggest hole in K0 here, it actually witnesses almost it's almost equal to the dimension rank ratio of S2n divided by 2. So this is a very special C-star algebra because it has this ordered K-theory in which you can really see the dimension of the underlying space in the sort of nasty behavior of the K theory. So in order to get the C star algebra for this theorem, you construct inductive limits which are built out of matrix algebras over things like this, and you take an element like this, which essentially witnesses the lower bound on the decomposition rank ratio, and you have to map them to each other in the inductive sequence, and this produces an algebra in the limit where K0 again witnesses the lower bound on this thing. Okay, so but this is all very specialized to AH algebras, and you would like to know if the idea of comparing matricial size to topological dimension can make sense for more general algebras, say just unital stably finite C-star algebras. And this picture here suggests that maybe you could find some way to dig it out of K-theory. But of course, if you have something like continuous functions, here's a space of the same dimension, and the 2n cubed, this is contractible, and then the K0 group is not interesting, and therefore you're not going to be able to see the dimension of this space in the K0 group. But you will be able to see the dimension of this space in the Kunz-Sennig group. And so the way to get an algebraic invariant which sort of witnesses this ratio between matrix size and topological dimension is to use the Kunz-Sennig group, which I have time to define. Okay. So, semigroup. So here we have A, this any C star algebra, A, B, positive elements in A. And he writes, so the definition is due to Kunz. A is dominated by B, like so, if there exists a sequence Bn in A, such that when you cut down B by the Bn, this goes in norm to A. Okay, so the way to think of this somehow is in a very generalized version of the rank of B is bigger than the rank of A. All right? And then we say that A is equivalent to B if and only if you anti-symmetrize the relation. And B. So this is an equivalence relation on positive elements in the C-star algebra, and you can extend this to matrices over the C-star algebra, and you build a semigroup in exactly the same way that you do for the Murray von Neumann semigroup, right? So it is you extend this notion of equivalence to extend this squiggle to this sometimes written M infinity of A. This is just the union of A. Okay? And then you define the semigroup. This is the set of all A which are in this M infinity of A and are positive modulo this equivalence relation. Right? Normally when you build a Murray von Neumann semigroup, these are projections. And this is Murray von Neumann equivalence. Now we have positive elements and Kunz equivalence. Okay? And this gives you an idea, you can define addition the same way, add things down the diagonal, and you get a nice partial order which comes from this Kunz domination. Okay, so that's the brief review of the Kunz group. Something else I have to tell you about are the states. So, the dimension functions in the C star algebra A, this is a set of, so assume, now let's say A is unital, and we'll also say exact for the sake of dispensing with quasi-traces, but in fact everything I will say goes through a non-exact case using quasi-traces. For the dimension functions on A, these are states, so they're order preserving. On the Kunz-Sennig group for A, and if A is tracial, then well, I guess we can define this anyway. If LBF of A is a set of all these functions, S tau for traces in G of A, where S tau of some Kunz equivalence class. What you do is you take the limit as n goes to infinity of this trace applied to A to the 1 over M. So the way to think of this, if A were just some positive diagonal matrix and you took this limit, what would happen? Well, the entries would converge to 1 or 0. When you take the trace, you just get the normalized rank of the matrix. So this is like a rank function associated to everything. All right.
When you say states, you don't have an order unit necessarily. You mean order preserving.
Order preserving. Yeah, I mean, S of 1 equals A to T. Assumption now, from here on. Okay, so now this allows me to define a certain property, comparison, Kunsen group. So you can ask, I think Bruce is probably the first person to ask this, how well do these states determine the order structure on the Kunsen group? Okay, and so this definition is related to that idea. So we'll say that A is unital exact tracial. You say A has R comparison if A, well, let's start it this way. If the Kunz class of little a is less equal to the Kunz class of little b, whenever the state coming from a trace on A plus R is strictly less than the state coming from the same trace on B for all the traces. Okay, so not only does the value, the rank, if you like, of B strictly dominate the rank of A for every one of these rank functions, but in fact it dominates it by this amount here, okay? And then define the radius comparison RC of A to be the infimum of the set of R such that A has R comparison. So this gives you an invariant of the C-star algebra that tells you how badly comparison in the Kunsen group fails. At the main point, I guess. I just don't want quasi traces. You can take exactly away in these quasi traces. Yeah, that's right. Ooh, let me get the hearing. Okay, so here's the important proposition. Well, I'm ready. It's a proposition. It's probably a theorem now. The upper bound of the theorem. Theorem. Let X be a finite dimensional PW complex. And P projection, then finite dimensional, and here we'll say dimension equal to M. Then the radius of comparison of this C star algebra here that I've just defined. This is greater or equal to n over 2 minus 1 all over rank p, and less equal to n minus 1 rank p. Okay? So in particular, if this is A, then the radius of comparison of A is almost equal to the dimension rank ratio divided by 2, and it gets better. I mean, the error is very, very small. In fact, it gets better. Yes, I do. Thank you. Right. Okay. Thank you. So the error is quite small. So getting this lower bound depends on basically taking what I showed you in the case of the K0 group of the even sphere and realizing that in terms of positive elements on some closed subset of X. Basically do the same trick, except using positive elements instead of using projections. Getting the upper bound requires proving a generalization of the reasonably well-known classical result that if you have two vector bundles over some compact metric space of covering, or just compact Hausdorff space of covering dimension D, and if one of those vector bundles has rank, which dominates the rank of the other by 1/2 times D minus 1, then the bigger vector bundle actually has the smaller one as a sub-bundle, up to isomorphism. Okay? So what you need in order to prove this theorem here is the following result. Compact metric with dimension of X and A, B positive elements of the matrix algebra over C of X such that the rank of A X plus 1/2 n minus 1 less equal to the rank B at X, then A is dominated by B in, for Clemson's relation. Okay? So, I mean, you might think that this ought to be a not too difficult extension of the theorem for vector bundles. I mean, you have the same thing for projections, definitely, and that's an old result. The problem here is that A and B are kind of like put together out of projections, but not quite. So the hard part of this theorem is to show that A and B can be approximated in norm by some positive elements which are very well behaved, which are built out of projections in some sense. Anyhow, this gives you the upper bound for this invariant case. And then, using all this, for all C plus infinity, there exists a unital simple AH algebra again. AC such that this radius of comparison AC is equal to dimension ratio of AC divided by 2, all equal to C. So the range is exhausted. But that's not all. In fact, here, the K theory of each one of these algebras is the same as the spatial simplex. Is the same. So what you get is a one-parameter family of algebras all with the same K-theory and traces, but which must be non-isomorphic due to this invariant. So this RC of A to be thought of as an abstract measure of the ratio between the matricial and topological dimensions of the C-star algebra, despite the fact that both are infinite, is actually a very fine invariant and is able to distinguish this whole family. So this, in some sense, I mean, Macduff has this result, you know, uncountably many non-isomorphic 2-1 factors, and the canonical invariant in the world of 2-1 factors is kind of just the fact that it's a 2-1 factor. And for a time, our canonical invariant was K-theory traces, so this is kind of an analogous result. But of course, we know that we need more finer invariants to classify general AH algebras. That one of the reasons for trying to prove this theorem is part of a joint project with Ilya Sera. So the idea is to ask the question, we know that there is some classifying category for, say, unital simple AH algebras. George has shown us that. So there's an abstract classification functor, although we don't know what it looks like yet. And then there is the usual functor, which works in the case of slow dimension growth, more or less, K-theory and traces. And the question you want to ask is, how much more complicated is the genuine classifying functor than the old K-theory and traces functor, and in the world of set theory and logic, you can measure this difference in various ways. This result here says, so it is a fact that there's a natural, reasonably natural Borel structure on the family of C-star algebras that you're using here. Yeah?
When you say that K-theory is the same, you mean ordered K-theory.
In fact, K0 is the normal rationalism, and K1 is 0. So these are all pairwise shape equivalent, actually. And, yeah. anyway, so I guess this says that in the language of logic and set theory, that the distance between the old classification functor and the genuine one is at least smooth, right? So there's a natural Borel structure in these algebras, and the map which associates C to AC is a Borel map, right? And then this means that there's at least a sort of smooth difference in complexity. The thing that we are trying to do, and since I'm going to keep in the tradition of the workshop so far and talk about some work in progress, the thing we are trying to do is also prove something which is maybe a little more interesting from a set theory point of view. And that is the following. So these algebras have the property. So we have one, this F from C to AC is Borel, some reasonable sense. The second thing we have is that, A Morita equivalent, so AR Morita equivalent to AS implies that the quotient of those indices is rational.
Okay? Is the converse true?
And that's the conjecture. It ought to be true. So the opposite direction ought to be true. And so this is a project in progress. But if you can do that, what it says is that there does not exist G from the family ACs to R Borel such that AR Morita equivalent to AS if and only if G of AR equals G AS. It's just not possible to find a Borel map like that because you have this sort of equivalence relation here. I mean, this is how you get to a non-measurable set. Okay, so that's the conjecture. That's what we'd like to prove. And tell us.
There's no
non-trivial pairing. No, anything but. I mean, for trace space, it's the extreme points, a Hilbert Q, for all of them.
I'm curious, the theory of functions
are Borel. Well, there's not really a natural Borel structure in the world of all. I mean, this is a special, I'm talking about, this is a slightly artificial result because in the end what we have to do is consider a somewhat restricted class of inductive limit C-star algebras where there is some reasonable way to define a Borel structure which can be viewed as natural, can be viewed as coming from the structure of a C-star algebra rather than just invented completely. And with that somewhat natural Borel structure, then we get this result. But in general, I don't know.
These are all contained in old theorem first.
I guess the space of all the little subspaces of the Banach space, the subspace of the Banach space has a nice. So I don't know if it's Borel method. This is just a. So far, this is very much work in progress. I'm not going to claim it's any remarkable yet.
Well,
set theory questions can be directed.
Yeah, but there is more than just raw space, that's just multiplication and addition.
Other takers?
Any other questions or comments?
Could it be, is it conceivable that it's a continuous field?
Conceivable, I don't know, I have no idea. Oh, I wanted to ask one question. I would like to know if this function, or this invariant is lower semi-continuous with respect to inductive limits. I know it is when the limit has RC equal to zero somehow. I also know it is when it's a simple C-star algebra and gone. When these lower semi-continuous dimension functions, when these are dense in the dimension functions, which is a conjecture, Bruce and David Handelman, that that's always the case. But anyways, that's something I'd really like to know.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. Well, not to take anything away from the other organizers, but I happen to know this guy who's been working like a student to put this conference together. So thank you for everything.